Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
Sean, I hope I'm not overstating this here, but it seems like almost every week I'll see a newspaper story in a major newspaper about a beloved Catholic school somewhere closing. So before we get into the guts of your new report, can you briefly tell us why Catholic schools are in the pickle that they're in? You know, why we're seeing declining enrollment with so many of them?
Well, yeah, as you say, 1,500 Catholic schools have closed in the last decade. Last year alone, 167 closed or consolidated. Now, that's not a net closure. There were about 40 or so who actually opened. But the real reason they're closing is there's a demographic change in America, and the demographic change isn't just ethnic and religious. It's also urban and suburban, so a number of schools that are located in now poorer or rundown areas can't support the Catholic schools. And the tuition-supporting model that many of these schools operated on in what were once middle-class neighborhoods are no longer able to support themselves on that basis. And on the second point, which is what Abe Blackman at Albany Law School pointed out, is now there's a free, excellent, or high-quality alternative in many of these neighborhoods. And that's the charter movement. And when a charter school moves into a Catholic neighborhood, if a parent does have disposable income and they can find a free option that of comparable quality, it's often an easy choice for them to say, I'm going to choose what will allow me to then spend that extra resource on outside educational costs or on other things that my children may need. And so, you know, at $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 a head, it's very expensive in many of these lower-income neighborhoods to send your kid to Catholic schools, and Catholic schools haven't really met that reality. And so as a result, enrollments are declining as parents are refusing to pay higher and higher tuition costs for what they don't necessarily see as a demonstrably better education.
So it's demographics and competition.
Exactly. I mean, okay. There's definitely a competition angle, and certainly the demographic changes in many of these neighborhoods. I mean, in some cases, it's not ethnic or even socioeconomic demographics, it's just simply numbers. You go into Buffalo, New York, or Rochester, there's just fewer people there. So to expect the enrollments to stay static is just unreasonable. But in that case, there's going to have to be consolidation or closing, but it doesn't mean that the entire Catholic system needs to basically bend or break under the new constraints.
Okay. Now, I know your report is about what Catholic schools can learn from charter schools, but before you tell us about that, I did want to point out to listeners that your report also notes that charter schools learned a lot from Catholic schools. So can you briefly tell us what did charters learn from Catholic schools to help them be successful?
Well, George W. Bush obviously has been given a bad rap in the last years, but he has a phrase that was prominent during the 2000 election, and that is the soft bigotry of low expectations. And the notion being that Catholic schools always rejected the notion that some children can't learn or some kids are at disadvantages that can't be overcome. And the public school model, and to speak to personal experience, my father was an inner-city school teacher. Many of the school teachers that he worked with really held that deeply. They had a paternalistic attitude towards many of their students. And charter schools rejected that, and they said, no, like Catholic schools, we are going to affirm every child, and we're going to give everyone an equal opportunity to learn through excellent education, high-quality resources, and demand every child succeed. Additionally, on a programmatic level, they enforce discipline, they demand uniforms, they demand parent involvement. There's a lot of requirements that engage both the student and the parents that we know for a fact work, and Catholic schools have basically, by happenstance and by practice, been doing that for years. And when charters evolved, they looked over their shoulder and said, what are these Catholic schools doing that work so well? Why are these kids so well behaved? Why are they going on to college? And they picked up a lot of those cues.
Well, so now let's go to the heart of your report. Tell us briefly what Catholic schools can now learn from charter schools. One piece comes down to better educational technology. I mean, there's quite a bit in your report on that, right?
Yeah, a lot is in there. But I mean, what really underpins it, the substructure of it all, is data. I mean, we talk actually about one high performing charter school in Washington, D.C. called D.C. Prep. And I mean, they're doing a great job, but they're kind of in the Stone Age when it comes to how they process data, but they're still heavily invested in data as something that's useful. And what I mean by that is they aren't saying the year-end reports or the standardized tests are the be-all, end-all. And at the end of the year, we have a data wall, and we know that X Johnny's doing well, and Maria's doing poorly, and da-da-da-da. They say, okay, how do we take what this says in week one and make it into week three's lesson? how do we make month two of the year better than month one? And they really strive through data for continuous innovation and improvement for all of their students. And that's something that the best charter schools, and there's an important distinction to make between good charters and many of the rest, are doing. They really invested in data and saying to their, both their teachers, their administration, and their students that we're going to track your progress very closely, and then we're going to adjust accordingly. And that's something that, unfortunately, for various cultural and just simply resource reasons, Catholic schools have shied away from. And so some Catholic schools barely even take standardized tests. Sometimes they're required to do so by the state or under the new Race to the Top or No Child Left Behind rules. They're required to take them, but they certainly are rarely integrating them into their long-term curriculum, or let alone their short-term curriculum.
Are you optimistic that Catholic schools can adapt? I mean, can they embrace data? Can they take some of these things that, you know, some of the high-performing, cutting-edge charters are doing and redesign themselves so that they're doing it too? I mean, how optimistic are you that that can happen?
I'm very optimistic, and I think Catholic schools are actually at a huge advantage in this space, and that's why I think the report is so important for Catholic educators and even policymakers to really take a look at, is Catholic schools don't have much of the bureaucracy, and they certainly, in only a few instances in the Northeast, have teachers unions or built-in stakeholders that are inherently opposed to change. Most of the Catholic school educators that I've encountered and that I've heard anecdotally about are there for their kids. They often take huge pay cuts from what they would get in the public schools. They often work much longer hours, and they love what they do. So if it can be presented to them in a way that this is going to benefit both their teaching and their students directly, I think teachers and administrators in Catholic education are at a special advantage to take a hold of this, to grab a hold of this data movement and really run with it. And I think that they're actually a huge advantage. And there's a culture in Catholic schools about taking on, you know, difficult projects, both with kids and in curriculum, and really diving into it. And I think this is a project that will take some learning. But in terms of the obstacles faced by public districts, I think Catholic schools are at a great advantage because many of those bureaucratic obstacles just don't exist.
We are in this new world, and there is more competition. So one of the questions I had after reading your report was, okay, so let's say Catholic schools do respond quickly and embrace some of these things you're talking about. But what if everybody else does too? You know, what if other private schools better embrace data and do things like blended learning, and other charter schools, and maybe even traditional public schools? If everybody's competing and looking for the best thing to help their kids and boost their advantage in terms of competition, how would Catholic schools stand out then? I mean, if everybody adopts these things, what do Catholic schools have to offer in addition to that where they can stand out?
Well, the early adopter dilemma, which is the idea that somebody else is going to perfect the model and then someone's going to piggyback it on and do it better, is sort of the analogy of the United States invented the VCR and the Japanese just did it better and cheaper. I mean, that's not an awful problem to have. That's a good problem. I would put it in those terms, that if there's more competition and more school choice. For Catholic schools, they offer something that isn't only academic. But the problem is that their core mission to a certain extent is academic. So they're offering character formation. They're offering things that no public school can offer. And that can't be thrown out with the bathwater in the case of Catholic schools. So even if high-performing charters come into the neighborhood and are out competing them, they are still going to have a reason to prefer for many of these parents. But it's not a reason not to adapt simply because other people might beat you to the punch. They're only going to be falling further and further behind if they don't adapt. So it's not really an option to not adapt. It's really a question of, can you make sure that your innovation is continuous and you move forward after the first stage and the second stage, and you continue to offer parents both value and high-quality education.
I hear you. Well, I didn't mean to suggest that they shouldn't adapt. I just wondered if everybody was adapting, would they still have other features that would make them attractive and give them a leg up? And it sounds like
certainly Catholic schools have a community feeling, and they have a religious component. And as I said before, the teachers really do care, I would say, much more than in most public contexts. They're being paid less often. They're doing this out of a love. It's, in the Catholic context, it's often called a vocation. And that notion is something that many Catholic schools won't lose through this transformation. It will only be accentuated by the model.
Okay. Well, Sean, one last question. So the organization I work for down in Florida, Step Up for Students, administers tax credit scholarships to low-income kids last year, about 40,000 of them. And so many of them use those scholarships to attend private schools, in many cases Catholic schools. What's your take on how vouchers and tax credit scholarships can fit into this potential reform effort with Catholic schools?
Well, I think that it's actually great when we have a choice or a portability option for parents, because parents then can go with their feet and they can say, look, this is a better option for my kids. Now, a lot of these programs actually cost less on a per pupil basis, which means that many of these students would actually be fully covered by comparable voucher programs. For example, the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program covers $8,000 of tuition for elementary school students and $12,000 for high school. But the actual operating cost at most Catholic schools in the district is higher than that. So that means there's a direct subsidy from the Archdiocese and Burnett. Well, if we move to a model where it's cheaper and better, which is what Blended offers, we really will see the fact that the taxpayer dollars are going further for more kids.
Right.
If you could cover the full per pupil cost at a Florida Catholic school at $5,000 a head, that means you could, with $10,000, instead of only covering one child under the current model, you could cover two children, and the taxpayers win, because there's more kids doing better in school for less money. And that really, I think, changes the whole model, and it really helps organizations like yourselves to take their dollars and put them further towards that. And another thing is, an organization like yourself that's keen on something like seeing this transformation could maybe even help these schools through startup costs and other resources get to the point where they're bringing tuition costs down. And that would be a boon for both your donors and for the state of Florida and all the students who would be attending these new schools.
Well, there is an effort going on in our area, in our backyard in Tampa Bay, that involves the University of Notre Dame ACE Academies. And they've picked a couple schools in the Tampa Bay area to basically beef up quality. And they're going to use tax credit scholarships to bring in more kids, particularly low-income Hispanic kids, who I think you also mentioned in your report are kind of underrepresented in Catholic schools, despite the fact that they're overwhelmingly Catholic. And I don't know if they're going to be doing blended learning. I'm not sure exactly what models and what kind of structural changes they're making, but they definitely are looking at the tax credit scholarship as a piece of the puzzle to help Catholic schools become what they used to be.
I mean, that's going to be crucial. I mean, especially with a number of Hispanic families, as we mentioned in the report, they not only are under-attending Catholic schools relative to their population, but they're often in socioeconomic categories that make the prohibitive cost of Catholic education something they can't afford. And so opportunity scholarships are really going to allow these kids to succeed as opposed to being trapped in failing Catholic schools. I mean, I'll tell you an anecdote that to me is somewhat depressing, was Houston Catholic Diocese closed four schools in inner city Houston last year alone. They opened two in the Houston suburbs. Well, just to speak in blunt demographic terms, those kids in inner city Houston that need to be served or were being served by the closing school were overwhelmingly Hispanic and poor. And the kids in the wealthier suburbs are the kind of kids who probably already have access to decent, if not great, public schools relative to the quality of the Catholic schools. And so there's fewer and fewer kids in inner city areas being served by high quality Catholic schools as these Catholic school business models kind of collapse in on themselves. And that's a tragedy. And with the growing Hispanic population, there's an even greater need to serve these families and these communities.
Okay. Well, Sean, this was great. I really learned a lot from you, and I really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Ron.